I'd like to welcome all of you tonight to this conference, The Changing Psychology of Women and Men. My name is Johanna Shapiro, and I'm the conference organizer. Before we get started, I would like to congratulate all of you who are here tonight, first for having the courage to risk facing some of the consequences of your own personal issues about men and women, and also for having the courage to risk facing the possible consequences of the gas shortage in which we find ourselves. I don't know whichever is more threatening to us. Let me make a couple of announcements also, and then I'm going to say a few words of introduction. First, for those people who are getting university credit for this conference, you will need to take a test at the end of the conference, and you can pick it up where you registered. So if you need university credit through Santa Clara, be sure to remember to take the test that's available where you registered. Secondly, free of charge, tomorrow night, for those of you who are in a joyous, high energy and open mood, there will be a dance in this building, I guess right outside or right in here, I'm not sure where. It's described as a joyous, high energy and very open approach to dancing. All of you are invited to attend that. Okay, before introducing the first speaker for tonight, I'd like to say a few words of introduction, both on a more abstract and a personal level. I think that the last 10 years have been a period of tremendous excitement, tremendous change, and tremendous stress for both men and women. Women's liberation, men's liberation, gay liberation have bombarded all of us in our personal roles, in our social roles, and in our professional roles with imperatives for change. Many women have repudiated feminine characteristics to pursue the more socially desirable male characteristics of assertiveness, competition, instrumentality. Ultimately, what they are pursuing is male dominance and male power. Conversely, some men have chosen to nurture children, to express their emotions, to accept vulnerability, and to emphasize the warmer, gentler aspects of themselves. For women and for men, these changes have often meant an increasing sense of self-determination, an increasing sense of power over themselves and over their environment. However, with this choice, with this freedom, there have come problems of choice and the realization that our choices are not unlimited. At times, liberation has proved it can be as confining as traditional roles. Too often, we still find ourselves at war with the opposite sex rather than in love. And we end up in a quandary, both as individuals committed to growth and expansion in our personal lives and as professionals committed to helping others work through their own identity and interpersonal conflicts. Men and women have been struggling in isolation with each other, each sex attempting to break free from stereotypic restrictions. My feeling is that, by and large, this separatism has been healthy because it's enabled each group to understand and accept itself independently of the other group. But such separatism, I feel, is a developmental phase which eventually must be transcended. Separate but equal has never been a very successful policy. I predict that the next relevant model of masculinity and femininity must facilitate in some fashion the coming together of the sexes and must recognize that on the other side of liberation and self-preoccupation, men and women do face many of the same issues: how to balance family and career, how to form relationships with each other, how to foster interdependence as well as independence, how to develop as professionals, how to be assertive, and how to be nurturing. This reuniting, this coming together, will not be easy. Men and women do bring antagonism and hostility, as well as potential and promise to such an encounter. despite the commonality of what I perceive to be our next developmental task, men and women still entertain different worldviews and different sets of priorities. Yet it is my belief that the reintegration of the sexes represents the uniting of two wholes to form something larger, and it is my hope that this conference may show the way towards such an integration. Now I would like to say something on a more personal level about why I'm here and why it was important for me to organize this conference. One issue of great personal concern to me is that there are no sure models for living any longer, no one right path to follow. I'm the kind of person that has trouble making decisions, making choices, and so in my own life, I have opted for an all-inclusive approach, better known as the Superwoman model. In attempting to be the all-around woman, which I understand is being considered for inclusion as an event in the 1980 Olympics, on an abstract level, it simply means combining family and career, relationships and work. Now, that doesn't sound too hard. But in the specifics, this is what it means for me. At work, I'm one of three women on the tenure track at University of California at Irvine. One is imported, and the other is also a speaker at this conference, Dr. Ellen McGrath. At work, I also direct a program in behavioral sciences in a department of family medicine where all my colleagues are physicians and males, which is a tough combination to beat. At home, I participate in a commuter marriage with my husband, Dean, and that helps Air California and Pacific Telephone more than it helps us. We share our lives with our two small daughters, Shauna and Jenna, aged 3 and 5, who are part of a new generation of children who are brought up not only by their parents, but by daycare, teachers, babysitters, friends, grandparents, relatives, and a whole support system without which I don't know what I would do. Now, this is complicated, and it might be less of a euphemism just to say that it may be downright impossible. However, surveys of contemporary college women show that this is the model most frequently chosen as the one that women want to pursue, one that combines family and career. Recently, the Superwoman model has come under attack as being essentially unrealistic and self-destructive. However, as one of the walking wounded, I would like to offer a revisionist interpretation. Let me state clearly at the outset that I do not believe that every woman or every man has to hold a job outside the home, or that every woman or every man has to have children. But at a symbolic level, I believe that the combination is critical to the development of one's full potential as a human being. Because I think what we are really talking about is the integration of our masculine and feminine selves. As a human being, I firmly believe I need to be nurturant, gentle, yielding, warm, and intuitive. And I also need, for my own sense of self-esteem, to achieve, to excel, to be a leader as well as a helper, to be in touch with my own power, and on a level which transcends the simple union of masculine and feminine, I need to be self-aware, centered, and in Maslow's terms, self-actualizing. What I am looking for, and what in a small way I would like to help create at this conference, is a model which gives concepts such as family and work new meaning and new relevance. I've become increasingly aware that such a model involves change and liberation, not only in women, but in men as well, and in the society as a whole. Thus, I come to this conference with more questions than I have answers, and a clear sense of the mutuality and interdependence of all of us here tonight as men and as women. Before introducing the main speaker, I would now like to ask my husband to come up here and say a few words to you. Dean?
My name is Dean Shapiro. I'm the Northern California half. I, too, would like to welcome you. And I would like to say that from my standpoint, too, this conference has a great deal of personal relevance, how you might say from the inside out. When Johanna first moved down to Southern California about a year and a half ago, it raised a lot of issues in my life. Especially when I was down in Northern California. For the first time, I was in a secondary status position. Johanna was the one that everybody held up on a pedestal as this phenomenal person, and I was the husband. That was a tough role for me. The conference tonight is, or this weekend, is of a high academic quality. The speakers are those that are nationally recognized for their expertise in the respective areas. But we'd also like the conference to have an experiential and a personal level for us. In that regard, I'd like to ask each of you, borrowing from my colleague Dr. Piaget, to be aware of why you're here. All of us have different reasons for being at this conference. For some, it is academic knowledge. For some, it's more personal kinds of reasons, how you want to grow as men, as women. For some, it's interpersonal. We'd like to ask you to take responsibility to get from this conference what you came for. Make that agreement with yourself. I'd like to also say the speakers this evening are, or this weekend, have different perspectives. There is no pat answer. There's no right way toward a human liberation. And you're going to often see that the speakers are in conflict with each other. This is intentional. We don't want to make it look like it's going to be an easy task. Each of us for ourselves has to find what Johanna and I refer to, borrowing from Don Juan, as the path of heart. We each have to find our own way. We'd also like to say, though, that in the midst of all the confusion that there is about how to find this path of heart and how should I live and what's true male and what's true female and how can I combine the two and what's androgyny and what path should I take, that we try to keep a perspective, that we try to keep what's referred to in the East as the cosmic chuckle, some kind of perspective on our lives, on the delicacy and the fragility that all of us men and women have as human beings. And one way of doing that, Linda, could we pass out? We have an exercise that we'd like to do as a way of beginning this evening. Now, this exercise draws from an old American tradition of a folk tune. And we'd like to ask you if you'd be willing to participate with us in this tradition.
Are you going to use the mic or shall I use this way?
Okay, does everybody have a copy? Okay, we have a couple people in the middle that are missing some. Okay. Everybody have one now? Okay. Well, I come from traditional value land with a briefcase on my knee, and I'm going toward human liberation, my true self for to be. Oh, androgyny, oh, don't you cry for me. I can be assertive and yielding if I really want to be. Oh, the choice is hard, the value's in disarray. My eyes are full of tears. I've been taught to live in a certain way for so many conditioned years. Oh, androgyny, oh, don't you cry for me. I can be assertive and yielding if I really want to be. At first when I try, I feel so tense. Am I really liberated or not? My body's so tight, I almost wince. I want to shout, let me stop. Oh, androgyny, oh, don't you cry for me. I can be assertive and yielding if I really want to be. Oh, the path is tough, the road is rough to escape those stereotypes. My body, I can be powerful and intimate at night. Oh, androgyny, oh, don't you cry for me. I can be assertive and yielding if I really want to be. Yes, I try to follow my path of heart and live how I feel right. Oh, I meditate and monitor to transcend the sex role fight. Oh, androgyny, oh, don't you cry for me. I can be assertive and yielding if I really want to be.
One more time.
Oh, androgyny, oh, don't you cry for me. I can be assertive and yielding if I really want to be.
Yeah. Can pick it up then. But when the man did poorly as compared to the woman who did poorly, the man was punished more. And I think that this is an interesting phenomenon which might generalize to other aspects of our society, that men receive both more punishment for deviance from the traditional stereotype, but also receive more reinforcement when they conform, and women are kind of stuck in the middle. Now, we all know that everybody kind of snickers at these stereotypes now, and we've moved forward under the influence of women's liberation, men's liberation, gay liberation. The traditional stereotypes began to change. More recent studies suggest that the healthy woman is now perceived as being more instrumental, more competent, more successful, and more adventurous than the psychologically healthy man. I think what we are beginning to see is the development of a new stereotype, the liberated stereotype. And Dean and I have been interested in this question, and the research to which he referred earlier consisted of trying to find out a little bit more about what liberated stereotypes consist of. And as far as we can read our preliminary data, the stereotypes have simply reversed positions. And in a sense, I think they could be experienced very clearly by what Warren did this morning. Women acting as men in a bad way, and men acting as women in a bad way. We found that the liberated man is described almost exclusively by both men and women by traditional feminine stereotypes: sensitive, in touch with feelings, understanding, helpful, tender, cooperative, warm, gentle, expressive, adaptable, giving, and also the traditional negatives: weak, spineless, passive, timid, dependent, and vulnerable. I'm going to make the next slide.
Here we have a slide of what Johanna is saying, where the roles are exactly reversed. The husband has the apron around his waist, the wife coming home with the briefcase from the executive office. So that the new liberated stereotype is merely switching roles. I can't read it. Welcome home, house husband.
Similarly, we found that the liberated woman is described by a constellation of characteristics weighted heavily in the stereotypically masculine direction: assertive, capable, independent, career-oriented, intelligent, self-reliant, competent, as well as some feminine qualities. We did find a few, such as supportive, open, and warm, surviving the transition. And then traditional negative masculine stereotypes were also included, such as aggressive, unfeminine, obnoxious, controlling, and hairy armpits. And what to make of that finding? We have to see what the computer says about hairy armpits. Show the next slide. Oops. That's going to be a problem.
It's backwards. We'll try to read it for you. Can you switch it, Jay? Can you read it? Or do you want me to read it?
Oh, okay. Here we go. The woman at the podium is saying, little boys are always encouraged to boast about their achievements, while little girls are scolded for boasting because it's unfeminine. But with assertiveness training exercise number 2, women can rediscover the pride that we have every right to express. Each one of you will stand up now and say out loud the one thing you're most proud of about yourself. Someone stands up in the front. I'm very proud of the fact that I have never boasted. I think for me this illustrates that simply in a kind of superficial way pursuing masculine goals, we really don't gain very much of anything. The next one. Oops. Well,
we can tell you what this one says. It says, Office of the Director. You can try it again.
Replace him with a will.
It says, Office of the Director, and it says at the bottom, a collision in the executive corridors of power. Again, the liberated female, in quote, as Johanna has just reported some of our research, is somebody who can now be assertive, independent, and in the corridors of power.
Okay, do the final slide.
A man is watching TV. Get the ball. Let's go. Cut him down. Go, baby, go. Let's move it. Come on, go. Ah, the bum dropped the ball.
This is who women are trying to be equal to? And again, I think the point is fairly obvious. Clearly, there are pitfalls in both traditional and liberated stereotypes. First, research by Sandra Bim, formerly of Stanford University, now at Cornell, on traditionally sex-typed individuals indicates that they tend to be very heavily influenced in their decision-making processes simply by whether a given behavior is considered by society to be sex-appropriate or sex-inappropriate. And what this means, just to clarify, is that people who are sex-typed, who perceive themselves as stereotypically feminine or stereotypically masculine decide whether to mow the lawn or go shopping or go out on a date or ask someone on a date, primarily whether it corresponds to society's view of traditional sex roles. She discovered that people like this are more nervous, tense, and like themselves less well than a comparison group of androgynous individuals or people who are able to participate in stereotypically masculine and feminine characteristics more equally. One might extrapolate from this that the liberated stereotypes might also produce the same constrictions and the same limitations. There hasn't been any research on this to date, but as a clinician, I have certainly seen evidence of this in individual psychotherapy. I've seen many women who feel that they cannot yield, cannot be gentle, and many men who are sort of frozen in a very passive position for fear of being seen as aggressive. And it seems to me that we have created at least a potentially bad double bind for people, that although the context of the stereotypes and the content has been reversed, too often the results on a personal level remain the same. The individual male or female becomes controlled by the situation, by the expectations of others, rather than maintaining self-control over his or her own behavior. And I think it's interesting to note that control is a very important issue in the dynamics between men and women. Both Judith Bardwick last night and Warren this morning talked about control and how important it is. Bardwick saying that when people have too much control, they cannot bear to risk intimacy. So I think this is something we need to pay attention to.
So now what we've done is we looked at the traditional stereotype for male and female. We've looked at what's happening, and what our research basically is what you all filled out last night. It's just asking people, what do you think a liberated stereotype is? And very interestingly, what happened was there was a cross. So that a liberated male is now a traditional female, and a liberated female is now a traditional male. It's an improvement, maybe, but as Johanna mentioned, we can get locked into new stereotypes. So what we'd like to do now is we'd like to discuss an alternative model. Alternative to traditional stereotypes, alternative to liberated stereotypes. What Johanna and I have called our path of heart. Now the path of heart